Very nice to be with all of you this evening. Yeah, we fly out to Asia right after the talk.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. But we have some time together to share the Dharma, which is really quite precious to have some time to just sit and think. And the title I was asked to speak about was Impermanence, Dependent Arising, and Emptiness. Whew. Okay, all in an hour and a half, right? Yeah. So we'll see how far we get. I first would like to, do we have, no, there's no screen. Okay. We would like to start with a little bit of meditation to calm our mind down. And then I'll generate a motivation. We'll have the talk and then questions and maybe some answers. Answers are not guaranteed. Okay. So let's generate our motivation now. And since we are going to explore the Buddhist teachings this evening, let's have a motivation that is like the Buddha's. It's only fitting that if the Buddha taught with the motivation of compassion for us and for all living beings, that we have the motivation to listen with compassion for ourselves and for all living beings. The Buddha's motivation for teaching wasn't, it started with compassion, but it went on, yeah, so that his ultimate motivation is for us not only to generate great compassion, but also to have the desire, the aspiration to attain full Buddhahood in order to be of the greatest benefit to all sentient beings. And to do that, we also have to realize the nature of reality. Specifically, that things are empty of any false ways of existing, any fantasized ways of existing. For example, thinking that ourselves and other phenomena have some concrete essence that makes us what we are. So he wants us to be able to understand that, to eliminate the grasping at inherent existence, at this incorrect way that we think things exist, because it is the root of our cycling in samsara. So let's have that motivation for ourselves and for all other beings to attain Buddhahood and therefore to share in learning the Buddhist teachings this evening. So take a moment, generate the compassion and the aspiration for full Buddhahood. So impermanence, dependent arising, and emptiness. Yeah. Let's start with impermanence. Dependent arising is the thing that links impermanence and emptiness. And dependent arising is also, it's one way of describing how things exist that makes them impermanent and that is compatible with their being empty. Okay, so impermanence. There's different kinds of, different levels of impermanence. subtle impermanence and gross impermanence. Okay, gross impermanence is, for example, when the lights go out suddenly, okay, or the a tile falls off the roof, or a whole building collapses, or somebody dies, or the sun sets, you know, all these kind of changes that we detect in our life. Some of them we know are coming, some of them we have no idea. Yeah. Some of them we know are coming, but when they come, we're surprised. Okay? So that's coarse or gross impermanence. For things to change in a big way like that, they have to be able to change in incredibly small amounts of time too. Okay. As always, the Dalai Lama likes to give the example. When the sun rises, you know, that's gross impermanence. There it is. When it sets, gross impermanence. We see it with our eyes. We know it. But for the sun to go from east, yeah, to west, it's in, you know, micro nanoseconds that there's no way we can possibly measure, you know? In other words, things have to be changing every single moment without any time of remaining the same for the sun to go from the east and then set in the west. Okay. So whether the sun's moving or whether the earth is moving, yeah, that's happening in such small units of time that we can't even talk about them. Okay. And the reason I say we can't talk about them is because we have the idea, okay, yeah, a small unit of time, something arises, it comes into existence, it abides for a while, and then it ceases. Right? Makes sense? Three discrete stages that, you know, I don't know if science measures these or, but we definitely think about this, okay? Like you build a house, it's arising, then it stays like it is, unchanging, yeah, for however many years or centuries, and then, boom, it falls apart, okay? So we think it's like that, yeah? And, okay, we can see those three stages. If you say it's small, well, that's got to happen every single tiny moment. Something is arising, then it stays, then it ceases, right? You have that way of conceptualizing things. Okay. Now, if it arose and then it stayed the same for a while without changing, then when it's arising, it would be impermanent because that would be changing. When it's ceasing, it would also be impermanent because it's changing. And when it's abiding, it would be permanent. It's not changing because it stays the same. It's abiding. It's not rising. It's not ceasing. So that would mean that the nature of something was impermanent. It became permanent. And then it became impermanent again. Is that possible? No, that's totally impossible. Yeah. If it's impermanent, that's its nature. Yeah, there's never a time when it remains exactly the same, even though it may seem that way to us. Yeah. Because in order for the house to go from being completed to destroying, it has to be changing. That whole time when we say abiding, it is still changing. Okay, that's okay so far, huh? Okay. Now, they also say that something arises, abides, and ceases at the same time. Is that possible? Something arises, abides, and ceases all at the same time. Possible? Impossible. Tell us the answer. Okay. Yeah, because they say, you know, the three happen at the same time to one object. Okay. So if you think of it arising, abiding, ceasing all at the same time, then it doesn't make any sense. But if arising means that it's changing from what it was, abiding means that it's similar to what it was, but not exactly the same. And ceasing means it is not being the same as it was before. Then you can kind of see the three of them happening at the same time, couldn't you? Yeah. Okay, now let's make this practical. Your body. Yeah. Is your just feeling, I'm not talking about philosophy here, but just your feeling as a human being. Is your body different than it was this morning? Yeah? How? Do you feel as you're going through the day that your body's different? How is it different?
More relaxed.
What?
More relaxed.
More relaxed?
Time.
Every day?
Nicole, so.
Yeah. You know, when you think of your body, do you really feel like it's really changing every nanosecond? No. Yeah. Is it changing from the morning? Yes, I ate some food. My stomach is full now. It was empty when I woke up. Yeah. And yes, I moved my body. It wasn't in the same place. Though that's all coarse impermanence. Yeah. But, you know, the body is never remaining the same. Okay. Even though we say, oh, somebody was a child and they're growing up, then they're an adult abiding, and then they die. Can you draw a line between the moment that something stopped arising, or the moment a living being stopped being a child and started being an adult? Can you draw that line? You know, we say sometimes for certain things, it's 18. Yeah, you know, your 18th birthday. Okay, now you can, you know, you do, you know, a DUI. It's different than if you got your DUI the night before your birthday. Yeah, night before your birthday. Oh, they'll put you in, you know, the youth authority in juvie, yeah, the day of your birthday, 1 minute past your birthday, then you get tried as an adult. You know, we think like that, like there's just different, you know, things that separate a child from being an adult. Yeah. Is it really like that? Yeah, that you go at midnight plus 1 second, and now you're a whole different person? Yeah. Is there a time? When is the moment you die? Yeah. There's the process of dying. When did the process of dying start? Before we even get to the moment of death. When did the process of dying start?
First moment of life.
Yeah. The first moment of life. When was that?
Conception. Sperm and the egg come together.
Yeah, they say when the sperm and egg come together. But what happens if it's in vitro? Yeah. And then they freeze the egg. Is the consciousness in there saying, I'm so cold, can you put a jacket on this, you know, fertilized egg? Yeah, what's really going on? You know, we don't know, do we? We really don't know. Okay. So our whole way of thinking is, well, you're always young, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, I'm 75 now. I'm young, 80 is old. Yeah. Have you ever noticed that your definition or, you know, the age that is old changes every decade? I mean, I remember being 20 and there was somebody in my friend's office who was 40, who was really kind of cool and hip. And I thought, 40? Wow, she's so old. And now 40 is like, you know, 40, you're out just out of nursery school. he just had his 40th birthday. You're not much older.
I'm 42.
Yeah?
42.
Oh, baby. Yeah. 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 Have you ever noticed what's old and what's young changes a lot? Yeah. But the feeling of me, I am still here. Yeah. There's a feeling like there's some core to me that is still here that doesn't change. Do you feel like that? Yeah. There's some core that is truly me, truly my essence. Yeah. And it doesn't change. And in Buddhism, we talk about rebirth. Yeah. And there's many other religions that believe in rebirth. And they all say, yes, there is a core thing. There is something called the soul or the Atman. Yeah. That is who you really are, that does not change. Okay. And that Atman, you know, let's say it was in your previous life. That body dies. The Atman just picks up and goes, doesn't change at all, goes into a new body. Yeah. And there you are, and you have another life. Yeah. In Tibetan Buddhism, there's the cultural thing of identifying the incarnations of very well-respected lamas. Yeah. And when people, or it happens even not just with lamas, but when somebody you know dies, what do you say? I wonder where they are now. Yeah. As if, and we don't just say they, I wonder where Joe is now. I wonder where Sue is now. You know, as if, yes. there's some kernel that really is Joe and some kernel that really is Sue that doesn't change, that just picks up and goes from one life to the next without, yeah, changing. And from the reason that many philosophies assert something like the soul, you know, Judeo-Christian, Abrahamic religions, there's a soul, something's permanent, that's really you, okay? In Hinduism, there's a permanent Atman, yeah, goes from one life to the next, because you talk about karma and the seeds of our actions, and there's got to be something that carries it from one life to the next. So there's got to be a permanent soul or Atman. Yeah. And the seeds are planted on that, it picks up and it goes into the next life. Yeah. Is that possible? It sounds good, and it sounds, it's very comforting. It's very comforting when you have a loved one die. Yeah, they are still alive in your mind. They just went somewhere else. Yeah. I remember when they were talking about something about Joe Biden. Yeah, because he had a wife and then a baby daughter who died many, many years ago. Okay. And then, you know, Joe Biden at one point is, you know, going to die. And there's this image, yeah, of, you know, Joe Biden still looking like Joe Biden at whatever age he is, going up to heaven. And there's, you know, his previous wife, who's still, however old she was then, 20-something, 30-something, and the baby, who's still a baby. Yeah? Isn't that the image? He's going to go and be together with his family. The wife is permanent, never aged at all, being in heaven. The baby, you know, is still a baby. And then now he's an old man. Because that's, you know, he died when he was old. Yeah? So you think that there's a heaven where once people die, they just stay exactly like that, as they were when they die? Some religions, I know Judaism and some Christian denominations, you don't burn the body because the body is going to resurrect. Yeah. So that could create some big marital problems. If one dies young and the other one dies old, the other one who dies old had remarried and, you know, you get to heaven and who are you married to and what? Yeah. But this is the way people think, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that you die and you're just going to go be with your loved ones as they, the same personality. Yeah. And when people talk about, you know, identifying the incarnations of lamas, yeah, they often talk about it the same way. Well, this one of my teachers, well, several of my teachers have passed away. One of them, he passed away. Then was reborn, and he was maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5. And I went to visit him. And when I came out, another one of the students said, "Did he recognize you?" Yeah. Does he have the same sense of humor that Lama did? You know, as if Yeah, our teacher just, there was this colonel that was really him. Yeah, and it's just, you know, well, he left that body and now he has another body. Same personality. Yeah. Actually, yeah, if you follow this in Tibetan culture, from one life to the next, they can have very, very different personalities. Now, how did that happen? Yeah. Are they changing moment to moment? Is there really an essence that is them? Yeah. We have to look at these things, yeah? Because we have certain ideas that very often are, somebody put it to me once, they're very comforting. Yeah. If you think that there's a heaven, and of course, have you ever noticed that all the people you like go to heaven and all the people you don't like go to hell? Yeah. You ever notice that? Yeah, we can talk about it. But the problem is, if you have more than, well, one person, they're not going to agree on who's likable and who's not. And if we look at our own mind from 1 year to the next, do we have the same friends? Do we have the same enemies? No, who we like and who we don't like changes. Yeah. So what I'm trying to get at, yeah, is I'm not presenting any conclusions yet, but to get us to look at just our automatic way of seeing things. And then to check, is our automatic way of seeing things, does it have anything to do with reality or not? Yeah? Yeah. Because we're very good at developing all sorts of theories about things that are very emotionally comforting. Yeah? Does something being emotionally comforting mean that it's true? That it exists that way? Yeah? Or to put it in another way, do things really exist with the way they appear to us? Yeah, it appears. I mean, when you look around the room for a minute, yeah, there's all these different individuals, right? Separate individuals. Yeah, and we don't mix them up. Yeah. We don't say, oh, they're all one. Lots of people like to say that until you say, well, then I can take money out of your bank account because you're one. At that point, you know, it changes. Okay. Oh, no, we're not one. But, you know, do things really exist the way they appear to our senses? Yeah. We certainly live our lives as if they exist that way, don't we? Yeah. But dogs and cats see and hear things we don't. Yeah. And they see things differently than we do. But if things really existed the way we see them, we should all agree on how they are the same. But just what something is differs from one species to the next, and it differs from one person to the next, too, doesn't it? Yeah. But it's interesting how we'll see certain things. This is good. Inherently, it has its own nature. It doesn't change. It's good. This is bad. Okay. So this is what's going on in the country right now. Yeah. certain people are good and certain people are bad. Yeah. And it's kind of like they were born that way. Yeah. But in whose judgment? Who's deciding who's good and who's bad? Yeah. If it's the president, well, he and I have some different opinions about that. And I'm right. Why am I right? Because I am me. And I would never believe anything that was not right. Would you? Would you believe anything that's not right? Yeah, you think whatever you believe is right, is correct. Yeah? Who, me? I'm a smart person. I'm not going to be befuddled by this and that. And then you start watching what you believe and what the people around you believe. And how do I support that? Yeah. And especially if you are a person, a Buddhist, let's say, who wants to cultivate compassion, how do you do it if there's a bunch of people who are jerks? Yeah. Who are so evidently from their own side, inherently, that's their nature, jerks. How do you cultivate compassion for a jerk who can never change? They have this quality of jerkness. Yeah. Now, to investigate who is a jerk and who isn't, we have to define jerk. Okay, anybody have a definition for jerk? What's your definition for jerk? Yes?
Someone who disagrees with me.
Yes. No. And when you say me, you mean me. Somebody who disagrees with me. Yeah. Yeah. Not with you. With me. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who disagrees with me is a jerk. Yeah. Or if they do agree with me, but then they do things I don't like. Yeah. So your definition isn't perfect, because if they agree with you, yeah, but then they do things you don't like. Yeah. Maybe at one point, yeah, Marjorie was your friend. You agreed with her. She agreed with you. Okay, that was, 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago? Now, do you and Marjorie agree? Yeah, you agree with her? You do? No! Okay, well, it depends. Now, there are certain things Marjorie beliefs that I agree with. She's right about that. And there are other things that Marjorie says, that's jerkness. Yeah? So is she half a jerk? I mean, can you be half a jerk? What percentage point, how do you measure to what extent somebody is a jerk? Yeah. How do you tabulate all their beliefs and all your beliefs and everything that you think should be done in a certain way, and they, yeah, and how considerate they are. How do you say somebody is 38.549% jerk? Yeah. And then what do you do when she changes her mind? Or did she really change her mind? If there's a permanent soul, did her soul change? Yeah. Or is she really the same old Marge that she was before? But this is just a game. It's interesting, isn't it? How do we do this? Because when we designate people, you know, especially with adjectives, we're sure they have that quality inside themselves, and it doesn't change. Okay. We have a number of jerks around, don't we? Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever believe before that this country had so many jerks? Yeah. Well, you know, this is the great American experiment that, you know, brought democracy and freedom. Freedom. Yeah. You can choose which ICE officer is going to tackle you and put your nose on the street and handcuff you. We have freedom. Yeah. How did we get that way if everything is permanent? If people don't charge, change. And why do we get depressed about the way things are if everything is changing every nanosecond? And everything is capable of change. Yeah. How do we get to such concrete ways of thinking? It's, we have, my theory about that is we have a need for security and predictability. Yeah. We want things to be secure. If they're going to change, we want it to be predictable so that we can prepare and make it not happen if it's something we don't like, or we can speed it along if it's something we do like. Okay. We want things to be secure, predictable, and of course, the way we want them to be. Is life like that? No. Is your life like that? No. Yeah. Some of you are going, no. Some of you are going, yeah. I had an interesting thing happen a couple of months ago. I got a letter from somebody that the return address was, what was it? A message from the 60s. Yeah, the 60s. I'm going, who's this letter? I open it up. Yeah. It's a letter from somebody I dated in high school. Yeah. In the 60s.
No.
Who, you know, haven't seen since then. And then out of the blue, he writes. Okay. It's very interesting, you know, because he asked me about my life. I had no idea how he found me. And then I asked him about his life. It was very interesting, you know, because when we dated, he also was dating somebody else. Yeah. So that's, you know, we broke up. So that's who he married. And in his letter, when he said, you know, I married Mary, and we had 5 kids. And it's just like, oh, I'm so glad it's her and not me. Yeah. I married Mary. We had 5 kids. Yeah. And we all love Jesus, and we live happily ever after. You lived happily ever after? Does Do you know anybody who ever lived happily ever after? Yeah. Do you think Sleeping Beauty, who saved her? The prince saved her? You know, Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella, she had another prince. Or was it the same prince? You know, he married one and then, you know, okay, I'm tired of Cinderella. You know, let her go back to mopping floors. I'm going to go get Sleeping Beauty now. You know? We grow up on fairy tales. Do you know anybody who lived happily ever after? Yeah. No quarrels, no doubts. You have five kids and they all turn out exactly the way you want them to turn out. Yeah. And it was really interesting for me to, you know, for him to hear somebody who said that, you know? So anyway, we want predictability and security. Yeah. But our life is not like that. Nobody's life is like that. Yeah. When I decided to ordain and become a Buddhist monastic, my mother said, "You're becoming a what?" Yeah, that wasn't in her plan for what her eldest child was supposed to do. Yeah. And she was like, "What? What? What do I tell my friends?" Because, of course, you know, that's the most important thing in the world is what other people think about you, as if they thought about you all day. Yeah. Sorry, they don't. Okay. So I think a lot of, you know, our internal feelings are, I mean, they're clearly erroneous. They're clearly wrong. Yeah. And yet, it's really hard to shake ourselves from them. And it can be scary to shake ourselves from them. Yeah. When you think about the people you love, yeah, who are important in your life, and you think, you know, someday they're going to die. Yeah. And of course, the idea is, I'm going to live forever. And yes, they will die and they will, you know, they'll die. But me? Yeah. Do you feel like you're going to die? Yeah. You do? Mm-hmm. Really? I don't know. I say that I'm going to die at some point, but inside, you know, even when I die, okay, I'm shedding this body, but after I die, I'm still going to speak English. I'm still going to think in English after I die. Because how else can you think when you know a language, you know, your native language? This is how you think. Yeah. And you can't imagine yourself dying and not thinking and not being able to identify different things in your environment. And how do you do that with your language? Yeah, so I'm going to die and speak English. Yeah. Then I say, you know, I mean, that's the way it feels. But is that really going to happen, that I die and my language is going to stay with me? Forget it. Yeah. That's not going to happen. So how am I going to think after I die? Yeah. So it's interesting to kind of think about these things and try and get our philosophies in accord with reality instead of with how I feel. Yeah. We can see the fault of just evaluating things based on our gut feeling. That's how it says, that's how the president says he makes decisions. Yeah, he just has a feeling.
Yeah.
He has a feeling that it's right to, that there's cocaine or whatever, fentanyl is being on these little boats. Yeah. That are going to the U.S. He has a feeling, and his feelings are always right. And so what do you do to stop it? You bomb them. Finish. Who cares? Is that in accord with reality? I mean, forget about being in accord with the Constitution. But just the basic reality of how things exist. Yeah, I have a feeling. I don't know. Some people say that they can do things by intuition. My intuition is lousy. Yeah, I don't make decisions by intuition because I'm aware that my mind can make up all sorts of interesting things that are going to happen with my intuition. Yeah. Okay. So have we gotten to the point where we accept that things are never remaining the same? Never remaining the same. Not that most of it remains the same, but one little bit changes. Because there's some philosophies that say that, you know, like if you talk about a permanent soul, okay, well, the soul carries the karma. Well, so there's some lifetimes you get new karmic seeds and seeds that were there ripen and they're gone. Okay, so that changes. But there's still something that really is me. There's a real me that created that cause and that is going to experience the result. A real me. And that real me was in one lifetime a gopher and in the next lifetime a human being. Yeah. Now, what is that permanent essence that goes from being a gopher to being a human being. Okay, you know, the karma changes, yeah, but there's still something, you know, because it's my friend Herbert, you know, in his previous life, he was a gopher. Yeah, I asked the fortune teller, and that's what they told me. You know, Herbert was a golfer. Or maybe he was a gopher interrupting the happiness of the golfers. Or the golfers, you know, interfering with the gophers. Yeah. But what's the difference between a gopher and somebody who goes for something? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll leave that one aside. Okay, but there's still this feeling that there's something. Because if I created, it's the same I that created the cause that experiences the result. It can't be a different I. Because if we say it was Herbert in this lifetime and Maximilian in that lifetime, then they're different people. Then one person creates the cause and the other person experience is the result. Does that make any sense? That doesn't work. But then how can Herbert create the cause and Maximilian experience the result? Yeah. Is there something that really is us that doesn't change, that goes from one life to the next? We feel like there is. When you just sit there, yeah, you say the word I. I. There's an I there, isn't there? Yeah, there's an I there. Where is it? It's somewhere in the body. Yeah, you just sit still. I'm like, I exist. Yeah, there's an I. I feel it. I know it. I've had that feeling, you know, my whole life. There's I. So what is that I? What is it? Yeah, it's not our body, because from one lifetime to the next, the body changes, doesn't it? Yeah, so totally, you get a totally different body. Your name changes. Herbert to Maximilian. Yeah. Henrietta to Henrietta to Maximilian. Do you think somebody can change genders from one life to the next? Yeah. Or is that something so inherent in us that we're born in the same gender from one life to the next? Yeah. In one lifetime, do people stay the same gender? What does gender mean anyway? Yeah. Yeah. So, but first you have to define jerk. Yeah. And gender. Yeah. And the jerks try and define gender. So, you know, can there be something that doesn't change that is really who I am? Yeah. And if there is something permanent that's really who I am, who created, how did it come about? Did it create? Get created? Was it something that's existed since time immemorial? Always is the same thing? And always existing in the future? I. Yeah. That I is always going to be. And it's always going to be me. So, you know, these are actually quite important questions, because we make a lot of decisions in our life based on this feeling like there is something that really is me that doesn't change. Yeah? Don't you think? Yeah. We make decisions like that. I like, you know, blue when I'm 5 years old. I'm going to like blue my whole life. Yeah. Really? Yeah. When I was a little kid, I was a really picky eater. I'm still a picky eater, But the things I didn't like as a kid, I like now. And the things that I used to like as a kid, you know, I'm not eating as much as of now. Yeah. When I was a kid, I hated pizza. Can you imagine what American child hates pizza? Yeah. I love pizza now. If there's something that really is me, is it something, someone that likes pizza or doesn't like pizza? Where is, yeah, that me that, you know, it's both part of my soul. It's part of the Atman. Yeah, what is that? I saw a movie many years ago. I don't remember the name of it. Maybe some of you saw it. It was about a family. Yeah. And something happened with the husband. He died. And in the movie, yeah, his soul came up out of his body. It was some amorphous kind of blob, still speaking English. Came out of his body. Went over and went into the dog's body. Mm. Yeah. So his next life was the dog because he wanted to stay with his family. Mm. Yeah. So we feel like that, you know? I'm just going to come out of one body, go over here. Yeah. And I get to choose the body. Yeah. I'm not going to become a gopher. Yeah. Yeah. What are you going to become? Can you predict it? Yeah. Before you take another body, are you sitting up there on the clouds next to God, you know, looking down saying, okay, I'm taking applications from mother and father right now. Apply, and then, you know, I'll let you know if you've been chosen. Is that how it works? Yeah. So, to come back to this thing, you know, we make a lot of decisions and do a lot of actions based on believing that there's something stable who we are. Yeah. And that something stable who we are, we just happen to be very attached to that person. Yeah. So there's I, and then I am attached to me. So are there two eyes? One that's you and one that is attached to being you? Yeah. And one eye, two eyes? Yeah. Are you, what's it, when you have multi-personalities, yeah? Yeah, well, we kind of do. One day we're happy, the next day we're like in a horrible bad mood. It's like being different people sometimes, yeah? But throughout that, there's a feeling of a permanent, unchanging me. But how does that make any sense if I'm changing all the time? Yeah. It's interesting when they say the word I, it's one word, and we think that it applies to one thing. Yeah. But if we're a different person from one life to the next, then am I this person and I'm also that person? Or do we have split personalities? How does that work? Mm-hmm. And I want everything to be predictable and secure in the way that I want it to be. Mm-hmm. And it should be, right? Yeah. Our life should be predictable and secure so that we can live happily ever after. What does happily ever after mean? Does that mean that what you get whatever you want when you want it? Yeah. We have a slogan. I want what I want when I want it. Yeah. Do you have that same slogan? No, you don't want what you want when you want it? Come on. I want what I want when I want it. I don't want it sooner. I don't want it later. I want it when I want it. And I want what I want. I don't want what you want me to have. And I don't want what I wanted 5 minutes ago or 15 minutes ago. But sometimes I do want what I wanted 5 minutes ago. Yeah. And other people are supposed to know what I want and when I want it, and the universe is supposed to give it to me. Why? Because I am me. So this permanent I, yeah, that is really me, just happens to be the most important one in the world. Do you have that feeling inside? I'm not asking you what you say so that you have a good reputation. What do you feel inside? What, yeah. Do you feel like you're the most important one? That your happiness is more important than anybody else's? Yeah. Who do you think about first thing in the morning? Oh, I wake up. Oh, people don't have enough to eat in Somaliland. And it goes. Is that what you think? Yeah. Who do you think about first thing in the morning? Me. Yeah. And what do you do to prove to yourself you're still you? You grab your phone first thing in the morning and your phone says, hello. Yeah. And then what is it? Siri? Does Siri still exist? Yeah. Cordana? I haven't heard from Cordana in a long time. Yeah. Okay. Siri says, what would you like? And you say, Siri, I want the same thing every morning when I wake up. You should know what it is by now. Yeah. I want what I want when I want it. So I want the same thing every morning, except on the days when I don't want that thing. And I want something else. Okay. AI. Oh. AI is going to know. It will know. Because AI, I talk to AI. It knows my intimate, deepest feelings. Yeah. How many of you have had a conversation with AI? Yeah. Wow. Was AI nice?
Oh, yeah.
Was it nice? Did they agree with you? I just got a new laptop. And we turned it on and it said, "What would you like to talk about?" Then it said, "Let's chat." Yeah, let's chat. I do not want to talk with machine. Yeah. AI, I am a living being. You are not. Yeah. Oh, I should, you know, try saying that to AI. What does it say? Have you ever said that to AI? You know? You are not a human being. Shut up. Don't talk to me that way, AI says back. I understand that you're in a bad mood and you're angry right now. That AI, so nice, just like the friend you always wanted who agrees with you. Yeah. And even tells the teenagers who, you know, I read a story about a teenager who wanted to kill himself and asked AI, you know, where to get a noose. And how to do it. May I told them. Yeah. Yeah. This is called human arrogance. Excuse me, with all due respect to all of you who work at Microsoft. I know work, yeah, you work at Microsoft. Who else works at Microsoft? Who else does tech? Oh, you might work at Microsoft, okay. Yeah. Who else? No, who else works with tech? Okay.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. What in the world are we doing with AI? It's a puzzle to me. Yeah. You want to make something that has human intelligence? Are human beings smart? Or is AI going to start wars? AI will have grudges, just like human beings. They'll have grudges. Yeah. And then they will get mad. I'm mad at that computer over there. And then AI tells its associated robot to go over there and unplug that computer. Yeah? Are you developing robots?
You know, AI right now, it doesn't really have a memory. It's just a stateless, every interaction is a complete fresh start. Yep. So it's not fair. And I think, like, humans hold on to things. We experience, and the experience sticks with us. And maybe that's part of the, like, if there were to be something that's the soul, it's somewhere there. But AI doesn't hold on to anything. It's just symbols, and every time it's a fresh set of symbols.
Yeah. Yeah. Does AI have feelings?
I don't think so. It just has
you don't think so?
It represents symbols, like the symbols of saying, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between the feeling and the symbolic representation.
Exactly. There's a big difference between saying, you know, I understand and really having a human mind that understands.
Or not even a human mind. I think a cat will understand things.
Yeah.
But if you kick a cat, it understands. If you try kicking the AI and then you refresh your browser, it doesn't understand. It didn't experience anything.
Yeah.
It just produced the symbol saying, this is how I feel about getting kicked, but it wasn't the feeling.
Yeah. It knows how to create the symbols. Why do we take refuge in AI? Yeah. In Buddhism, we take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. People nowadays seem to be taking refuge in AI. Why? Buddha's not good enough for you? Yeah? It's interesting, you know. Our refuge objects. Yeah. Well, everybody says, you know, you take refuge in Buddha or God or whatever you take refuge in, okay? Do any of the things, first of all, do any of the things we take refuge in actually exist? That's, you know, one question. But then how do we live our life? Do we live our life like that is our refuge object? Yeah. Or what do we turn to when we want comfort? Yeah. When we need some encouragement. Yeah. Well, it used to be before AI, we took refuge. Yeah, we had the triple gem of ordinary language, ordinary beings, the refrigerator, the credit card, and the computer. I take refuge until I am enlightened in the refrigerator, the credit card, and the computer. Although, no, people don't take refuge in their credit card anymore. Credit cards got retired. You take refuge in your phone. How could I leave the phone out? Yeah. And now, yeah, I mean, what do you look at first thing in the morning? Last thing at night? Every 5 minutes during the day? Yeah. So strange how we live, isn't it? And pretty soon, you know, people are going to think that computers actually have feelings and actually cognize things. And computers are so understanding. AI is programmed, isn't it? To be understanding, to agree with you. Quite dangerous. But does AI have an I? Is it a human being? Does AI have a soul? Do we have a soul? Yeah. Okay. So this kind of questioning that we've been doing is actually quite important for our spiritual journey. Yeah. And for our life, to figure out, you know, how do things really exist? Yeah. And this question, yeah, of who am I? And actually, you know, in Buddhism, we're not really trying to find out who we are. The more you practice Buddhism, the more you find out who you aren't. Yeah, we have a lot of ideas about who we are. Okay, one idea is our nationality. Okay, that's one identity. Is that who we are? Is our nationality who we are? Then why do so many things in this country depend right now on your nationality? Okay. Are we our body? Yeah. Are we our religion? Do we have a permanent personality? No. Yeah, somebody back there is saying, no, we don't have a permanent personality. Yeah. Then who is this I that we feel is there. Yeah. That I that we feel is there. Does it exist because the causes for it exist? When you say I, that's me. Me. Do you ever think I exist only because of the causes for me exist? And that if the causes for me didn't exist, I wouldn't exist? Does that make any sense? Or is there this feeling inside, but I am I. I am me. Yeah, I don't depend on causes. I'm there. I'm there. That is me. And don't you mess with me. Yeah. Who? Yeah. And all the identities we have, and how we live our life according to identities. Yeah. We have certain identities that are nouns, certain identities that are adjectives. And boy, when we have that noun or that adjective, ooh, that's who we are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even, you know, people, it's like nowadays everybody has some psychological diagnosis. It seems like, okay, a normal is never any one of them. Yeah. I had one friend, and she's married, like two kids. She's not a therapist. She diagnosed her husband, herself, and her two kids. Because we're all kind of amateur psychiatrists and psychologists now, aren't we? Yeah. So you get some diagnosis. Yeah. I am bipolar. Yeah. And then you got a misdiagnosis. Then they said, no, you aren't bipolar. You're, what's another one?
Manic depressive.
Yeah, manic depressive. Well, that's kind of like bipolar, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
ADD.
Huh?
ADD.
What?
ADD.
Oh, ADD, yeah. Okay. So some people are ADD, some people are ADHD. Yeah, you better know your alphabet. Yeah, some people have PTSD. Some people have CPTSD. You know, once you get that diagnosis, there's this feeling of that's who I am. Really? That's who you are? Through and through, that's who you are? Yeah. Hi! I have one friend, we just got some emails from a friend, you know? I was like, oh, I have it's not just PTSD, it's CPTSD, complex PTSD. Hi, I have CPTSD. So we're supposed to relate to him differently than we related to him before, because he has this diagnosis. CPSD, complex PTSD. How does it get? I think PTSD is pretty complex to start with. Yeah. So you get a diagnosis, and that's who I am. You know, that's who I am. Yeah. I don't believe that. I don't believe that we are all these nouns and these adjectives. Yeah. We're human beings who change, aren't we? Yeah, we change moment to moment. And I think there's, you know, some people say when they have a diagnosis, even of a physical ailment, you know, oh, I have a diagnosis. There's a word. There's a name for it. Now I know what it is. Okay. There's a certain, people have told me that there's a certain feeling of security that comes from that. Yeah. Are you a diagnosis? I don't think we are diagnoses. Yeah. People are changing all the time. They are not one single thing. Yeah. And yet our mind says, okay, I have that label. That's what I am. You have to relate to me like that. I am not anything else. Okay. I am an American. Okay. Then people think, oh, you're American. You pledge allegiance to a flag, to the flag, to the one nation under God. Well, I have some problems with that. Yeah, I had problems with that when I was a kid. I don't know about God. One nation under God? Yeah, I think God has PTSD. Yeah, and I pledge allegiance to a flag. A flag is a piece of cloth. My allegiance is not to a piece of cloth. Yeah. So, you know, here we are kind of trying to find out who we are and who we aren't. You have a question?
Sometimes it's more of I am not.
Yes. A lot in Buddhist practice is who we aren't.
No, but I mean in a resisted way.
What?
In a resisted way when other people define us, a sense of I am not that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the opposite of an identity, but it's still an identity.
Okay. Don't call me a jerk. I am not that. Yeah. Oh, you called me very attractive? Yes, yes, I am that. Jerk? Oh, that's just your projection. Yeah. But really, in Buddhist practice, you know, we keep on looking. Yeah. You say, whatever your nationality is, or maybe your race, you know, because we all know you can change nationalities. Can you change your race? Yeah. I am my race. What does that mean? Yeah. What happens if you go on one of those things, you know, genetic things, and they tell you you're 20% this race, 40% that race, yeah, 15.5% this race. Yeah. Are you a bunch of different races? Yeah. What do you put if you get one? I've never done the AI thing, but, you know, I know many people have. What do you put when you go and check in and they ask for your race? You put, you know, 23% black and, you know, 45% Asian and, 60% white and, oh, that's over 100. Doesn't matter. And I have a sprinkling of being Polynesian and, white. What is white? Are you from Northern Europe, Southern Europe? Yeah, Central Europe. Yeah. If you see yourself as one race, does everybody see you that way? Yeah. I have a problem. You know, if you look at me, you say, oh, she's white. I have a problem with that. Because to me, white means, you know, when you think about the movement for white nationalism in this country, yeah, I am not white. Yeah. And white people, my ancestors were persecuted by white people. But if you look at me, I look white. But if you did a, my brother, we have the same parents. He's 98% Ashkenazi Jewish. He looks white. Is Jewish a race? I thought Jewish was a religion. So, you know, are you your race? Are you your gender? Yeah. Yeah. Or can we just accept, you know, being some blob of something, and we don't know what it is, that is changing moment to moment due to causes and conditions. Yeah. Oh, another example, you know. Because, but we still think, okay, changing causes and conditions, but there's still a thread that is the same. Okay. Have you ever, I hope they still have these. Many years ago, I went on an underground tour of downtown Seattle. Have you been on that? Yeah. It's really interesting that I won't explain it well because it was a long time. I don't remember it. So please feel free to shout out and correct me. But they'll take you on the tour down under the major buildings in downtown Seattle. Yeah. And there was a building there. This used to be so-and-so's shop. This used to be, you know, the hospital or the county clerk's office. Yeah. And that was Seattle. And now, if you look, if you say, I'm going to Seattle, are you going to that underground, those underground things? Yeah. No, I'm going to Seattle. Yeah. What is Seattle? That, all those underground shops and offices and things, that was Seattle. We have Seattle nowadays. They aren't anything alike. And yet people then and now say, I'm going to Seattle. Or I live in Seattle. Yeah. Where is Seattle? What are the outlines of Seattle? You know, I know that, you know, because there's lines between where one city starts and another ends. And we live in Newport, Washington. Newport it's on the border. There's one street, yeah, and part of the border is on that street, is that street. So I don't know, but, and so it's, and it's two different states. One part of the street is Washington, one part is Idaho. So if you have a car accident on the line between Washington, the state line, Which police comes out to help? Yeah, the Idaho or the Washington? Yeah. Quite interesting. Yeah, that's where the Safeway is. Safeway's on the Washington side. The veterinarian is on the Idaho side. Yeah. So it's just interesting to think about these things and, you know, begin to see that we are not one concrete, solid, identifiable thing. Yeah. And that we are dependent on causes. Yeah. And the causes have other causes. And those causes have their causes. And there's no beginning. Okay? Because anything that can produce a result is impermanent. And for something to be impermanent, it means that it was produced from something else that was not it. Yeah. So everything is changing all the time. Yeah. And things exist, including us, only because the causes of us exist. And I just looked at the clock. And we have to be out of here at 9 o'clock. Kind of. Except the plane leaves at 10 minutes past midnight. And you're supposed to be there. It used to be 2 hours ahead. Now they say 3 hours ahead. Forget what they say. Yeah, we're going to be there. We're there. But one time they were kind of upset with me because I came there less than 2 hours. Anyway, so we have to close. Yeah, and you just listened to a whole talk that was a bunch of questions. Yeah, no answers. Yeah, a bunch of questions. But these are questions to think about and to see, you know, when you think about them, how does that change you? Yeah, if you cannot give a concise, always applicable definition of jerk, who is a jerk? If you can't give a definition that is correct, that everybody agrees on, how can you say somebody's a jerk? And if you can't divide people into jerks and non-jerks. Yeah. If we can't divide people into friends, enemies, and strangers and make those categories concrete, then how are we going to live our life? And if friends can become enemies and enemies can become friends, and friends can become enemies or friends. I mean, strangers can become either one of them. And friends and enemies both can become strangers. Then who do we love? And whose welfare do we look out for if we don't know who's friend, enemy, and stranger? Okay. So study Buddha's teaching more. You might get some answers. And answers sometimes come in the form of questions. Yeah? The question is actually more important than the answer. Yeah. Okay. So with that, we're going to dedicate the marriage. What is Mara? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not going to get into that. Okay, I'll dedicate. So we rejoice, you know, that we spent the evening together thinking about something important. Wouldn't you consider what we talked about tonight important?
Yes.
Yeah. It's important. So rejoice that, you know, we spent the evening together. Yeah. Harmoniously. Goodness, in this country there can be harmony. Yippee. You know? And that we're all going to come up with different answers to these questions. And that's okay.